This is the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. So why don't you go ahead and start by introducing yourselves? Let's start in order of who is dressed nicely.
All right. So I'm Chris Hamill, and I'm a father of two daughters.
That's cool. It?
That's it. That's all he got.
That's all I got. No, I'm a principal outside of Minneapolis. I have two daughters, and they're now both in college, and I've had lots of fun experiences also as a principal and a teacher working with children. So not only my own kids, but multiple children. So hopefully I can provide some insight.
See, he had more to say. He was just trying to be modest.
Well, is it my turn now? I'm Aaron Perkypile, and I live in Nebraska. And I am the director of operations for a local micro gym and also a business coach. And my wife and I have been married for 14 years. And our son will turn 13 in a few weeks.
Jeez, Max is about to turn 13?
Yeah, bro. Yep. That's what happens.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you would have met Max when he was 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Probably four. I think he had just turned 4 when we moved.
In 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, he just turned 12.
Smokes.
Max. And at your wedding, he was what, 9? Is that 4 years ago?
How many years ago is that?
2018. So he was 10.
He was 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're old.
It goes fast. It goes fast.
Yeah. He's 5 years away from heading to college. He's 2 years away from being able to work an actual job after school, which I'm looking forward to.
What's the legal driving age in Nebraska?
I think they can get a learner's permit at 15, or restricted. But we live in city limits, so it's probably a little bit different too. I haven't looked that far ahead. I knew when I was growing up what the age was.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I knew the day I could go in and take my test for my instructional permit and that sort of thing. He's starting to get excited about it. He's starting to get interested. But I asked him what roads we're on, and he's still clueless of where that is. So, you know, give him a couple years.
Okay. So he's not quite there yet.
No.
Although you could ask me what road I'm on half the time, and I'm like, the one by Best Buy. I mean,
In fairness, Chris lives in a much bigger city than I do. You know, we know most of the roads where I live.
True. I do know the main ones, but here a main one's basically an interstate. So
yeah.
In Philly, it's a lot easier, I think, to be familiarized with the roads and stuff, but sometimes I'm just like, I know I have to take a left and then I have to take a right. So I'm going to just take this quick left right here before the actual left that I need to take, and then I'll figure the rest out. That freaks out my wife. She'd just be like, we're going to get lost. And I'm like, yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll get there eventually.
I know the general area of town that it's, you know, the city it's in.
It's like, I know I need to be south of here, so I'll go south until I recognize something, and then we'll find it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then yeah. When that restaurant closes or that Easy Mart closes on the corner, you're kind of screwed. You're not really sure where to go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the reason why I wanted to talk to you guys is obviously because you guys are way further ahead in the fatherhood game than I am. And I haven't had many opportunity to talk to people who are that far ahead. So Chris, you have two daughters who are college age, and Aaron, Max is going to be 13, which I still can't wrap my mind around. So you both had your feet, like your feet aren't even wet. Like you are in the pool. You have like water above your heads. You've been in this for quite right. some time. So I want
to. I'm starting to be able to come up from air for air finally. So.
Well, yeah, right. Because
the water right now is at my chin. You know, I think the 13 to 22 maybe is going to be the testing years for us.
So you have that to look forward to.
Yeah, so that's great. I'm going to have to borrow Chris's snorkel.
Yep. And I would agree with that. It was all pretty easy. You start getting middle school social dynamics, and that's when things start to get busy and kind of explode. Now they think they need a social life also, and then that just leads to drama, and it's all sorts of fun from there.
Sure. Yeah. So how old were you guys when you first became dads?
So Taylor, my stepdaughter, I met Teresa right after my 19th birthday, and Taylor was 2.
Okay.
So, I guess 19.
19. Yeah. And then how old were you when Summy came along?
I got married at 20, had Summer at 21.
Okay. So 21. Aaron, how old were you?
Max was born in 08 and we got married. I think I was 23. I was 23. It was going to turn 24. I got to tell you right now, like doing the math on that is great because, you know, like I said, Max will be he'll be in college in 4.5 years and out of college in 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at, you know, sitting at a pretty good age when my kid's out of college and still have the prime earning years of my life that I don't have to, you know, send to school or car insurance and that kind of garbage. So it's worked out in the long run.
Absolutely. I'm like, at the time, it was a lot of work being that young. Teresa and I were both in undergrad and we're carrying a baby and a 4-year-old around. And it's like, why did you think this was a smart idea?
Yeah. But
then on the other side, I was 39 when Summer graduated and moved out. So when I turned 40, I was already an empty nester. So I will take it.
Yeah. And me, on the other hand, I became a father at 35. So by the time I'm an empty nester, I'll be in my 50s, maybe, like headed into 50, at which point I think I'll be starting to, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be climbing down the hill, but I'll be at the apex of the hill, just kind of balancing things out.
But how old will Michelle be?
I can't say that if you want to.
You can't share that.
Yeah,
is she older or younger than you?
I can't.
It's too late now because you already said how old you are.
I can't disclose that information. I plead the fifth.
She'll be 27 and an empty nester. So that's pretty good.
She'll be 25 for life. And that's she's going to be listening to this conversation. So, babe, I love you. And you are 25 for life. And Aaron is a horrible friend by even asking that question.
Hey, listen, that's what happens when you get a certain age and your kids become a certain age. Like you've seen it with the grown-ups you grow up around, like they just stop caring.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. I even try to talk to her about that amongst us, you know, like here in the home. And I'm like, babe, but you're going to be, and she's like, Kel, if you want to have a good night, I'm 25. I'm like, bet you're 25. So you guys were fairly young then. And I feel like the phase when I became a dad, I already had enough, I guess, life experiences, right? Because we're not the same people that we were at 30 than when we were at 20. You're not the same people you were now that you were in your early 30s and what have you. So I feel like I stepped into this with a certain level of perspective, life experiences, maturity, and all of that stuff. But talk about the experience, like you were doing just a little bit ago, Chris, of being in your early 20s, just like still trying to figure things out, and then also taking on the responsibility of a child.
Well, it definitely had its struggles, but for me personally, I know it had its advantages too. The struggles were, you know, we both were still in undergrad, so we're trying to figure out daycare, you know, getting these kids to school, why Teresa's got a major exam and I've got a Chem 4 test or a Calc 4 test. I remember the dean of the math department having to come get me out of a Calc 4 test because daycare was calling. I'm like, oh, how embarrassing. But it was good. I would say the struggle there is, you know, early 20s, at the time you think you've got it all together, but I wasn't mature. So I'm still trying to figure out how to be a good parent as well as raise them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that was a little difficult. On the other hand, looking back, some of what I didn't know then that I know now almost made it easier, because it's like, well, you just got to go with it. You don't always know better. I mean, now I'm setting my ways, fairly have my routine that I like. And the thought of, you know, having to run here and there and waking up in the night and stuff again, I'm like, well, how am I going to get up at 5 a.m. to do my morning routine and stuff? So at the time when you're just going with it, that made it easier. But, you know, I wish I would have had some of the wisdom I have now, because there are definitely things I would change, but that's also part of growing as a parent. And I don't know if it's because I've been through it now or because I'm older that I have that foresight.
Probably a little bit of both.
Probably.
Yeah. So Aaron, it's you and Carrie, Max comes along. What were some of the toughest parts about being a dad at the time that you can look back on now and be like, yeah, I really struggled with this?
That's a good question. I would say that I would echo some of what Chris said, where you just figure it out. You know, I'm almost 40, and I look back at kind of thinking in my own head of what my parents went through or how old they were when I was Max's age and that kind of thing. And they were about the same. And I just remember as a kid thinking my parents were like a mess, but there were three of us, right? So there was I had an older sister. I'm the middle child. I have a younger brother. And they were always tired. They were always, and I get that now. And we only have one. And he's not in everything. Like my brother and sister and I, we were all in everything at school, and we lived 30 minutes from school. So it's like a one way. So they're in the car constantly. So now I get it. I look back and give my parents a lot of grace. Hopefully, you know, a little bit more like, you know what? I'll tell you a secret about parents. None of us knows what the flip we're doing, and we're just figuring it out and hoping that we're getting it right and not messing up our kids too much. We're hoping we've tucked away enough money to pay for counseling for them as they grow up to unfix all the things that we messed up, right? But, you know, as a 24-year-old out of college, even before I'm old and set in my ways, like for a year and a half, almost 2 years, Carrie and I could do whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted. And so it was difficult to kind of switch gears and realize, guess what? Your life's not yours anymore. It was the same thing when you get married. Like when you first get married, you know, you first get into that serious relationship, you realize that I can't just make decisions and it doesn't affect someone else. Like all of a sudden that dramatically affects somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then the same way, even more so, I felt like there was an even greater responsibility because there's this there's this little human that isn't going to be able to survive or have what they need if you're not there to give it. But I would say that it wasn't terribly difficult for me, as you know, some of us, this is going to sound really arrogant. Some people are really focused on getting the thing done that they need to, like they're responsible, for the lack of a better word, but they're going to jump in. You're just going to do what needs to be done, 'cause that's what you know has to happen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I was raised, is if there's something that needs to be done, you just do it and get that done. So if that was changing the diaper, if that was feeding the baby, if that was doing laundry, if that's cleaning, bathing, like that just became part of your life. That's, you just had to accept, this is what my life is now. And if you fight the, you know, against that, it's going to be a lot more miserable. But if you just accept that this person is part of our lives now. And I think it's sometimes easy when you have that little baby, because they're cute and they're fun. I do remember when we came home though, probably the second or third day, Carrie's sleeping, 'cause she, you know, she fed the baby and she went to sleep, and Max is laying on the ground. I've changed his diaper. He's clean. Right. So he's 5 days old, and I just look at him like, all right, buddy, do something. Right. Like, been waiting for 10 months. You know, let's roll. I don't know. Roll over, say something. I don't know. Make some noise. Nothing. And so it's, you know, for dads who haven't carried that in the womb, right, or partners that haven't carried the baby in the womb, and now you're the baby's out. There's still, for like 6 months, it feels like you don't need to be there, right? Because the baby needs mom to feed if she's breastfeeding. The baby needs mom at night, in the middle of the night, and mom is usually mama bear and pretty protective for the most part. And so I think it was hard to still feel like I wasn't needed as part of this process. You know, 10 months ago I was needed for a brief moment, and now I'm not really needed.
Hopefully that doesn't go over people's heads.
Oh, they get that. The dads will get it out there.
You're both so deep in the game already. Do you still find, or better yet, what are some things that you still find yourselves, I guess, struggling with, if that's even the right question to ask, as dads, given that you have teenagers and you have college-age students? Are there still things that you still find difficult about fatherhood, even this far along?
Yeah, because... As Aaron was mentioning, I kind of had the same attitude. It was like, just fix it, you know? I might not do it right, but go fix it or make an attempt to. And that's kind of how I functioned. And I had a little bit different experience, because Teresa, seriously, I think it was 2 days, 3 days after giving birth, had to go back and take a final.
Holy
And man. So we had no option. It was... You know, I was on call. It was every other night type thing. And I was pretty much in it right away, which I think was good for me. But the biggest thing I would say I still struggle with is that tendency to just want to fix it. It's like, Dad, fix it. And I want to. But then it's like, okay, at what point is like, no, this is your time to make a mess. Mm-hmm. You know, you might make the wrong choice, but that's what's going to help you grow and figure things out. And even at 19 and 24, it's still like, well, I think I know what you should do, and I'm probably right, but I don't know that I should just, you know, push hard to just get my way on this one. This might be one where you got to figure it out.
It's hard as a parent to start seeing your child grow to a point where you realize over time, I need to teach them to think through this on their own and make a decision. Mm-hmm. If they want my counsel, they can have it. And that's what Chris is talking about. If they want my counsel, great. If they go and do it their own way, okay. But I've given them, hopefully given them the tools that they can come to a better decision than just throwing a dart at the wall or, you know, kind of fumbling their way through it. And you remember what it was like growing up as a kid. Like, if you talk to an adult or your parent or somebody and you didn't like the answer. And I think that's where we're going to start seeing it more with Max as he kind of hits those teen years. You see a little bit of it, mm-hmm. but we're not always going to be the person that he listens to when it comes to advice or wants to talk to us about those things. And mm-hmm. So I think the hard thing for us has just been trying to continue to find ways to create an experience for him or an environment for him that he will feel safe at some point coming to us with things, even if he doesn't necessarily want to.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I felt that way as a kid when you got the answer that you didn't want. It's like, oh, they just don't understand.
Yep.
Or you don't know what I'm going through. And it's like, yeah, you can have different contexts, same problems, mm-hmm. you know? Right. And it's trying to get them to think critically for themselves a little bit. So it's not just, you know, my daughters are always like, why do you play devil's advocate on everything? And I'm like, well, because if I just tell you what you want to hear, then you're not actually having to think through it at all. Mm-hmm.
So both of you, well, all of us really, to the point that you just mentioned a while ago, Aaron, you said it's hard to watch your child grow up. We just came from a very turbulent time last year during last summer, right? So I'm curious to hear sort of how you both handled just kind of guiding your children through that time with everything that had been going on in the world at the time.
I'll admit this was a tough one for me because living right outside of Minneapolis, the day George Floyd was murdered, my first thought is with my oldest, I'm like, don't go down there. You do not be there after dark. And then after more conversations, it's like, no, I get that. I support you. I know that's what you want to do. And now both my kids are down there. So it's hard to, you know, champion their beliefs and really be proud of them for what they want to accomplish, but also know that there's risks with that and be able to back off as a parent. I'm like, you're 24. I completely get you. But then when you also tell me you got squished on a median because a semi almost ran you over, it's like, should I be telling you just don't be there?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, no, you're an adult now. And, you know, realizing when it's their time to make that decision, and that's hard for me. And it still is. There's times I just want to step in and tell them what I think they should do. But I'm getting there.
I have to confess to Chris. So I don't know if the listeners know this, but Chris and I are brothers-in-laws. Our wives are sisters. And when I found out that his oldest was down at the demonstrations, I sent her a text and told her I was proud of her. So sorry to.
No, I did. I sent the same thing. I'm like, you can leave by dark, but I'm proud of you. And just tell me when you're home so I know you're safe. So yeah. No, I get that. And that's why I said, you know, everything in me and that we stand for, completely proud of her. But then on the other hand, I'm like, I don't want you hurt. So it's, you know, being able to let go a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
Did Max ask you any tough questions, Aaron?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have taken the stance from the beginning on anything that we're going to tell him the truth as much as we know it. So whether that's about sex, whether that's about race relations, whether that's about politics, whatever it is that he wants to talk about, we're going to tell him the truth as much as we know it and try to help him expose him to experiences that or opinions that aren't ours. You know, he goes to a school that is a conservative Christian school that's a non-denominational school here in Lincoln and extremely conservative. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when our family through the summer starts posting about you know, Black Lives Matter, or, you know, just even something remotely that's not full-throated support of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. There's crickets from parents of kids in his class, right? So this is, you know, it's like 99.9997% white school. Mm-hmm. In the Midwest. And then there's demonstrations that are happening in Lincoln near the Capitol. You know, we're probably 15 blocks from the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are upset because you've got, you know, a multiracial group of people that are out demonstrating by the Capitol, and then the Justice Center and the courthouse, and tear gas is being fired, and groups are marching down main thoroughfares through Lincoln, and blocking traffic and things like that. And we wanted Max to see those images. I think I feel really fortunate that he was at that, you know, he's 12 at the time. And so he's mm-hmm. kind of at this place where he's starting to process these things and try to understand what is injustice. You know, and then that led into the election season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife is a registered Democrat in a pretty red state, and I'm an independent, but, you know, in this year more than ever, I leaned way more left than I did towards the other side, and admittedly. And, you know, he would get into conversations with students at school mm-hmm. about these things. And I remember, like, he came up with these, we just try to give him sides of arguments. And then he comes up with his own kind of rebuttals. You know, he would talk about immigration with kids, and, you know, there's kids at the school all about building the wall. Mm-hmm. And Max would say, well, aren't you guys the pro-life party? Aren't you the guys that said that we're pro-life, but you've got mothers that are pregnant, that are fleeing from cartels, that are going to be killed, and their kid's going to be killed, their unborn child's going to be killed if we don't let them in. So what do we do there? This is my 12-year-old coming up with it. Like, we didn't even go there with that, but he had, like, listened to a podcast or a book on CD or on, you know, on a trip with mom, and was talking about kind of some of these immigrant families. So I think that is where it's this balance of, it's hard to see your kid grow up, but it's really fulfilling to see him sort through difficult mm-hmm. issues, to ask questions about George Floyd, to ask questions about what's going to happen to the police officers. You know, when he was 4 or 5 years old, I remember at Christmas time, we were at Chris and Teresa's house, and they lived in this really small town in Minnesota. And they were, you know, Teresa worked at the clinic and knew the cops, and had a cop come by so that Max could see the police car Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, he was pumped. And every time we'd see a police car for like 2 or 3 years, as almost, you know, he would ask to go up and, you know, introduce himself to the police officer. And he would say, you know, did you catch any speeders? Did you arrest any speeders lately? Like, that was, you know, that's who he was. Like, he loved that. And then to see it shift in his mind that could be, that person could be dangerous to somebody, or to be dangerous to him. But really, he could pull out at 12 and 13 years old. He could understand the difference between being a white male that's pulled over versus a black male or female in interacting with that. He was starting to try to process that and understand that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's where we just tried to have conversations of truth with him as far as we knew it, and educate ourselves. And that pushes us to learn about ourselves and the things that we care about and understand. You know, I made a post of my kid, you know, on Facebook mowing the grass. He mowed yards this last summer. And when this was going on, you know, I just imagine, because I will leave him at these two ladies' houses to mow their lawn, and then I'll come back and pick him up because he's old enough to just kind of handle the mower. And just imagining having a 12 or 13 year old son that's not white, and imagining there would be no situation where I would feel comfortable leaving him in that predominantly white neighborhood mowing the lawn. That really hit, you know. And I wanted him to understand, and even though he's in a really Caucasian, a really white context, I wanted him to understand that's not everybody's reality. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful stuff. Obviously, you know, I'm not there yet, but these are things that admittedly have been bouncing around in my head, you know, like what kind of life lessons, what kind of gems do I want to begin instilling in my 9-month-old's mind right now, you know, to begin cultivating that, to make sure that as he's growing, he becomes a responsible citizen of this world, no matter what country he finds himself in. Do you guys put, or how much pressure do you guys put on yourselves, or have put on yourselves, or do you even still put all of this pressure on yourself to make sure that when your kids, when your kids go out, you know, they are representing you and the family appropriately?
You know, as they get older, I mean, when they're younger, you think, oh, you can't behave like that. That looks bad. And there is that pressure. I learned pretty early on, though, I was more worried about manners and conduct. And as far as their opinions, those are theirs. And they'll learn quickly how they want to navigate some of those conversations. I think one of the proudest moments I still had was Summer's 4th grade birthday party. And we, small town, so you just invite all the girls in that grade, and they're all coming over, and they're like, oh, are you inviting that girl? She's weird. I don't know if I'm going to come if she's invited also. And it was one of Summer's pretty good friends. She's like, okay, don't come. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing something right. So, but yeah, there is that. But like I said, I really tried to focus on how they conducted themselves. I want them to be respectful. I want them to be courteous. I want them to, you know, acknowledge everybody and not be smug or arrogant, things like that. But as far as their beliefs, I really just let them have their own. We could have conversations at home, but I never once felt like I needed to try to censor what they said.
I don't know that this was something that was, that I've consciously thought about, like protecting our quote family name, but I am very conscious about him protecting his reputation. Admittedly, I didn't grow up with social media. That wasn't something that was around until I was in college.
Right. Yeah.
And I see gobs of kids and news story after news story of people that really F up their lives because in their future, because they are knuckleheads on social media, right? And they think that it doesn't matter, or sexting and stuff like that. So, you know, there have been things that we've done to try to help corral that. We don't, you know, Matt, we haven't allowed Max to have any social media yet, you know, because he doesn't need it. He's not, I promised him, you know, you're not missing anything if I could get rid of it and not use it for work and then also go down the rabbit trail of personal social media, I would 100% get rid of it.
100%.
But, you know, we went to parent teacher conferences last week, and as we were walking out, you know, all the teachers, we asked all of his teachers, you know, is he respectful in class? Is he respectful to you as a person of authority? Is he respectful to his classmates? Because I know he has these debates, and especially Bible class, where they have these opportunities for a little more free flowing conversation. And we were walking out, and there's a lady who works in the school as a, she does like math and reading. She's tutoring or like, you know, kid for kids that are struggling. She comes alongside. I don't remember what that's called, but mm-hmm. She stopped us, and, you know, just to get to know us, because it's a pretty big school. We've only been there for 2 years. She asked who our son was, or, you know, who our child was. And we told her, and she's like, oh, I love Max. He's so respectful. And, you know, I try to greet every kid when they come in the morning. And he's one of the few kids that will look up and respond and say hello and good morning. Oh, and wow. I'm like, good. He better, because we've taught him to, you know, to engage. And he's going to, in Nebraska, there's something called detasseling, where they walk cornfields in the summer and cut off parts of the corn so that it doesn't cross pollinate. There you go. For all those that aren't from Nebraska, there's some corn knowledge for you. but he can make good money, especially as a 13-year-old doing that, right? And he's pretty, you know, he told me last summer he wanted to do that. And he got referred to this company by a friend of ours who did it for 9 years, which is like unheard of. And, you know, she's my boss's wife and stuff like that. And so I told him, and Carrie and I have told him over and over again, like, you can complain and whine when you get home to us, but when, if you get this job and you go, you're going to walk and it's going to be hot and you can't take rest and you're going to work your tail off because you need to figure out that work ethic. And, you know, like, that's what I worry about. I want him to understand that putting in a hard part, putting in a hard effort when it's difficult, that's what I want him to, you know, to learn. And it has nothing to do with him being known as my kid or, you know, the Perky Pyle family and looking good on me. It has everything to do with, if I died tomorrow and Carrie died tomorrow, I want him to have the tools to go out and make a name for himself, and be respected and respectable and respect others. That's a lot of respects, but you get the idea.
Your vantage point right now, how do you see the fatherhood landscape shaping out in terms of, you know, people like me who are part of this generation of dads versus your generation of dads?
Wow, we're already in our own generation of dads, Chris.
Yeah, man. I mean, awesome. Listen, Chris has 8 girls and you have a teenager and I have a 9-month-old. Like, if that's not a generation apart, then I don't know what is.
I think that there are several things that are going to remain constant. And that is, let your kid know at whatever age that there is nothing that they could possibly say or do that would ever make you love them less. Like, just them being is all that it takes for them to be loved. You know, when Max first moved to this new school, he went to the principal's office twice in the first week. And so that was awesome. But we made sure he understood. We made sure he understood, like, it doesn't make us love you less. Like, there are things that we should work on how to, you know, de-escalate situations. And, you know, actually, he punched the bully the first day or like second day of school. And I was like, okay, I'm proud of you, because other kids went home and told their parents, this is going to be the best year ever. So I think that doesn't change, right? Like, every kid wants to know that they're loved by their parents.
Wait. He punched the bully on the second day?
Yeah. So the second day, the bully came up and was like shoving him around, trying to, you know, basically exert his authority. And like, punched Max, and Max turned around and punched him back. So the kid punched him first. He didn't punch him out of, you know, the kid punched him in the arm. So Max punched him in the arm back. And the bully was just, and then the bully and he both looked at each other like, we should probably go tell on ourselves. So they went and reported themselves to the teacher who sent them to the principal.
Are they good friends now, at least?
Nope. The divide has just grown even further. And I got to tell you, this is Max's maturity. Max has gone from, he knows that he wants to strangle this kid or hit this kid or punch this kid and some of his lackeys. But he's gotten to a point where he's told the teachers a couple times, because I told him, Matthew 18 says, you talk to that kid, ask him, what's his deal? Like, what did he ever do to you? What did you ever do to him? Kid doesn't know. So then he tells a teacher. Teacher can't do anything about it. So he took it to the principal. And the principal this year finally was like, sat them both, all three of them down. You know, there's another kid that was kind of involved in this, and said, none of you interact with each other. Don't talk to each other in the hall. Don't talk about each other to your friends. Don't think about each other. And that's going to sort things out. But I think that's the most pride that brought, you know, Max has brought me, that he's advocating for himself. Like, Carrie and I aren't going to go into the principal's office. Chris is a principal, and he knows that he's got parents all the time that are coming in whining and complaining and crying to help their kid out. Like, Max, if you need help, you're going to go talk to your teacher. You're going to go talk to the principal. And because you need to figure out how to advocate for yourself. And I think that would be the second thing. You know, the first thing is make sure your kid knows that you love them no matter what they do or say. Nothing possible can happen. And the second is teach your kids to advocate for themselves and figure things out for themselves. You know, I think it was a lot of fun. I remember when Max was 3 or 4 and he would get up and we'd have to get up and get him breakfast or something like that. When he learned how to pour his own cereal, man, the world opened up. I got at least 25 more minutes of sleep a day. Those things just continue to progress. Right now, Max has to do his own laundry. I might fold it for him because he's still a little lazy. But, you know, he's required to go take his own clothes down and put them in the washer, get them through the dryer, or he's not going to have clean clothes to wear. And, you know, each of those steps is just kind of fun.
Driving will be one too. You won't want to do it. And then after about a week, you're like, oh, just go take care of it yourself. Or go to the store and get me milk. I don't want to. It's like, do you pay for that car? Go get milk.
Chris, I'm curious to hear in your position as a school principal, you're interacting with kids 5 days a week.
Yep.
So, in terms of some of the things that are happening in the homes of these kids, what is one thread that you see or something that is kind of disturbingly too common when it comes to your students' relationships with their fathers?
I would say fathers especially. I notice it's missing. Because not to place gender roles, but I see a lot of young males not really knowing how to navigate things. And I think the thing that's missing is, and I thought of this earlier, I made a note to bring it up, is I don't think they have the conversations. You know, like there are things where I did different than my parents, because my parents, you know, just at that age, I think it's a generational thing, but they didn't talk about money, you know, mm-hmm. money was tight or things like that. You didn't let your kids see that. Mm-hmm. Well, when we were going through undergrad and, you know, getting income-based housing and food stamps and stuff, cause we had no income. We had those conversations with our kids, not huge in depth, sure. But we had that. It wasn't something we tried to hide, but I think talking to them like they are little people and, you know, that's how they start to think that way. It's kind of like, you know, then the teacher part of me kicks in. It's like, well, how do you get them to be able to think in terms of solving equations or something in math? It's like, well, you talk them through your thought process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you get help to get them there. And I can see that doesn't happen a lot. And whether it's, and sometimes it's just circumstance. It's, you know, dad's working 2 shifts and mom's a nurse, but works the night shift. So they get them on the bus in the morning and they're home in time to fix them dinner and have to go to bed and maybe help with homework. But there's not a whole lot of that conversation. And I think that's one thing I really advise parents to do. And one thing I really notice it's lacking is I don't think they have conversations about why.
Hmm.
Or how things are getting done, or why sometimes you have to do stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'm the first one to say that there were times when they'd be on my nerves and because I said so. And that is an okay answer mm-hmm. to learn the authority sometimes. But there also was a time to reason through why I thought going to this friend's house wasn't a good idea and things I thought would happen. And that, you know, I'm a lot older than you and I know what's going to happen. And sometimes
you don't know, Dad.
Make the wrong decision and they mess up. But I think that investing the time in the explanation and absolutely. Having conversations with them is one thing I think is missing sometimes.
I would say that when I was younger, you know, right after Max, you know, Max was hitting the really questioning age, 2-3 years old, and then on. And it felt like that kid would not shut up. Like he always had questions, right? Cause that's just, kids are curious and exploring.
Yeah.
It's really hard at 24, 25, well, 26, 27, 28. When you still kind of have this, I know everything, like I'll tell you what the answer is, and then why are you questioning me? Like, to put the ego aside and go through the why. Mm-hmm. Because you're like, oh, you know what? Max hasn't been on the planet for 25 years, 28 years. Like, he has zero exposure to this. If he doesn't get exposed to it from me, or, you know, or from some other person that he finds as an authority that will speak there as much truth as possible to him, mm-hmm. he's going to miss it. Right. And so those are, and I wasn't a teacher. This is where Chris's, you know, kind of background was like, how I want to be teaching my kids. You know, there were times like, I just want my kid to do what I asked him to do, or I just want him to do it this way. And, so yeah, I would concur with that. Like, spend a few extra minutes explaining why, and then they're going to ask you why on that. So if you don't know, like, Carrie's a medical professional, and so any medical questions, it was easy. I just deferred to her. It didn't matter what it was. Well, you should ask mom about that. I don't know, Dad. Why do I?
And then they start using acronyms. Yeah, and then they just start using acronyms and stats, and you're like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great answer. No idea what you just said.
This has been a very enriching conversation for me personally, just kind of getting a sense of what the future holds, right? I've been having a string of conversations recently with different people that's making me realize that parenting in general, but more specifically, fatherhood is not something that should be done passively, because I don't think there's necessarily, well, if it's done passively, it can cause a lot of damage, a lot of hurt, a lot of missed opportunities. But it's something that ought to be done actively. And it's grueling. I mean, it's like, you can't, once you become a dad, you're dad for life.
Right.
Like, yep. There's no point at which you can say, you know what? Screw it. I am not a dad right now until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Like, that just doesn't happen. So speak to young men like myself, or even younger, who are struggling with that realization, and offer some words of wisdom from where you now stand as fathers, to be able to encourage these young men to perhaps not give up on their children, not give up on themselves, and to keep grinding.
It is hard. And that's where, you know, well, you guys both know me, you know, gaining 50 pounds because you decide you don't have time to work out anymore and you're shoot hoops or anything, and then figuring that out. I would say, there's two things you have to do, in my opinion. Is one, you have to embrace it. It is a grind. It turns into a grind that turns into a job, but it's the most rewarding job you're ever going to have. Mm. And you're going to feel those moments of reward, not when you expect it. It's not when you're like, oh, I've coached them for this, they're going to do great, because then you're almost ready for it. But it's when they surprise you. But I would say one thing that's helped me with that is I had to learn what are my necessities for myself. And I know people talk about the me time, and I always thought that was kind of sounded selfish, but it's like, you know, you have to hold on to a couple of things that you feel like make you, you, and then find times to work those in. Maybe it's not going to the gym every day like you normally got to do, or whatever it was, but still find times to work that in, so you still feel like you're keeping your identity of who you were, mm-hmm. to an extent, mm-hmm. but also know it is different, and dad's going to be one of your number one jobs for a very long time.
And then if you have another one after a while, then it just starts over again and you reset the clock, right?
Right, exactly.
Don't be a fool. You know how the rest of that goes. I would say there have been difficult times in our relationship that both of us, my wife and I both, have considered splitting, right? So 14 years of marriage, it's bound to happen. You, that passes through your mind, but But the very next thought almost invariably has been, well, what does that do to Max? Mm-hmm. Is this really that bad to put Max through this? Because he's going to think that it's his fault. He's going to think that there's some, you know, something around him, because that's just where a kid's brain goes. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage dads who are struggling with the gravity of what they are in to understand that you need that kid as much as that kid needs you. Your partner needs you as much as they need, as that kid needs you. Like, even if, you know, my sister's a single mom and shares custody with her son's dad. And that's really difficult, right? Because they're out there on their own. I'm really fortunate. I feel really fortunate for my nephew because his dad is still involved in his life, you know, and wants to be a part of that. And that has a huge impact on a kid's development. It has a huge impact on the quality of life. So my sister has my nephew the majority of the time. Mm-hmm. And even if you've split up with your partner and you have the worst relationship with your partner and you couldn't possibly think of wanting to do anything nice for that person ever again, the moments that you spend with that child and give your partner that space to kind of recollect themselves and to have space away from that child is huge. I live in the same house as my wife, and there are times when we will look at each other and one of us is like, I'll take Max to the store for an hour and a half and go walk around the sporting goods store just to get him out of the house and get him out of your hair. Right. And then vice versa, you know, like, so, you know, I'll take him over to so-and-so's friend's house just so that you can have some space to yourself. Absolutely. You know, you need some autonomy in your life to, like Chris said, hang on to an identity, because if your identity becomes anything other than what your identity actually is, you're not going to be able to live up to the expectations that you've set for yourself. You're going to start pulling in perceived expectations from any number of sources, none of which are correct for you and your family and your life or your kid. Your kid needs you more than you give yourself credit for. The absence of a parent in a kid's life is incredible. And that could be they're dead. That could mean that they left, or that could mean that they are physically in the house, but they are emotionally vacant. They're not there emotionally, but your kid needs all of those things. And it is tiring and it is hard, but anything that's worth doing, this is stupid. Anything that's worth doing well is going to be hard, right? Anything worth doing is hard. Like it's not going to be easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it.
Facts.
Another podcast that we should be doing is, how come some people that seem to be terrible parents can have lots of kids, and parents that seem like on the outside would be fantastic parents can't have kids? That's another conversation.
That's an entirely different audience and conversation. Last thing I'm going to ask you guys is, let's bring it all full circle for our listeners. I've known you guys for many years now. Aaron, I met you first, and then through you, I met Chris. And your families have been, you guys are like family to me, and I believe that I'm family to you guys. And I've seen your kids grow, which is the reason why I'm still freaking out that Max is about to be 13 years old. Good grief. So I'm going to afford you this opportunity now for each of you to address your little ones, because I'm sure you look at them and you still see them as your little ones, and just kind of tell them how, tell them whatever it is that you feel about them at this moment. So go ahead, take it away.
So for my oldest, Taylor, she will be finishing with a social work degree.
Hold on, buddy. Don't tell me that. Tell Taylor that.
Okay.
Talk to
Taylor. I'm very proud of you. You definitely are the reason for most, if not all, of my gray hairs. But through that, you're also have made me a better person by seeing things outside of just how they affect me and from a different point of view, because we definitely look at things differently, but I couldn't be more proud of how hard you've worked for what you want to accomplish now. And Summer, you and I are both very similar, and sometimes that makes things easy, but it also makes things very difficult sometimes. But I have no doubt that you are definitely going to set the world on fire when you get to where you want to be.
Ugh. I don't like this part. I'm really good at staying even, but this one makes me think about my kid, you know, and that raises, I don't like to look like a softie. Okay.
Yeah, hopefully nobody at school listens to this. It'll ruin my reputation as the newsletter.
We're gonna post it in the newsletter. Max, there is absolutely nothing that you can do or say that would make your mother and I love you less. We love you more every single day. You are kind and you are thoughtful and you have a huge heart. And I am excited to see what problems you solve and what injustices you tackle. I'm proud of the way that you stand up for yourself and for your friends. I'm proud of the way that you stand up for women and for the LGBT community and for people of color. I'm super proud of your willingness to work on and think about hard, difficult things for anybody's age, but especially at 12, almost 13 years old. I don't want you to lose that. And if you do, it's probably because I did something wrong. So I have a trust fund set aside for your counseling to fix all the things that I messed up. And no, you can't buy any points for PlayStation. I love you very much.
Well, listen, I want to take this opportunity to share this with you guys because I've not had an opportunity to share this before because I just became a dad. But you both have been very instrumental to me personally in that you, Aaron, when I first met you when we were in school together, you legitimately adopted me without even knowing a thing about me.
And your Uncle Kelly.
Yeah, Uncle Kelly for life. And you allowed me to see up close and personal yet another example of what a good family dynamic looks like. And even though we're peers, I looked up to you as a father figure and the way in which you took care of me in the most amazing ways, to the point that you had to convince me, which wasn't hard, to go to Thanksgiving with you and Carrie to Chris and Teresa's house and then to South Dakota. Every time I tell people that I went to South Dakota, they're like, why the hell were you in South Dakota?
And you made it back?
And I made it back. I always talk about when we stopped at that gas station and there was that other young guy who was like, wait, what? And came over to the car. It was like, are you real? Like, yeah, bro, flesh and blood.
I'm here for 15 minutes. We're getting snacks and gas and we're out of here. Oh, I remember that. I wish Max could have understood what was going on there.
Every time I talk about that story, I'm like, yeah, we stopped at this gas station and you wouldn't believe this guy. Like, the look on this guy's face was just like, there's another one in the whole state. There's another one. But no, so I, and being up close and personal to both of your families, and Chris, when I've gone to your house, personally, you guys have flown me out to go spend time with you. And so whenever I'm around you guys before becoming a dad, I was observing the way in which you were interacting with your wives, the way in which you were interacting with your children, because I was learning from you guys. And a lot of the things that I've learned from you, I am now able to implement in my own family with my own child. And I just have to say thank you. Thank you for giving me that opportunity to be so up close, be so integrated in your family, that now that I've branched out to my own family, I feel a lot more confident knowing that I have both of you guys in my corner, knowing that you guys have my best interest in mind. You're always available to help me out. And so I just want to say that you guys are amazing fathers, amazing men, amazing husbands. And I love you guys very much. And sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for showing me the way to become an even better father for my child.
You know, it was our pleasure, but don't sell yourself short. I don't think you realize how much of an impact you've had on my daughters, having somebody they could interact with, relate to. You're one of the kindest, most introspective individuals I've ever met. And some of the wisdom you've shared with my daughters and give them, you know, somebody else's point of view. I mean, let's be honest, you couldn't have come visited a more pale family probably in the world. And just, you know, my daughters still talk about that all the time, and just how you could explain things to them and weren't intimidated to answer their questions. Going to all white town and you went to have lunch with my fourth grade daughter and they're like, you got questions from, oh, you must play in the NBA, huh? Because you're black. And then another one saying, are you here, dad?
Yeah.
But, you know, you've always handled that with such grace and such compassion that it's really taught them that it's really helped them be able to have conversations that are tough and be able to not only have what I feel are very good points of view and values and respect for all mankind and equal rights, but also the courage to have those tough conversations and champion it, not just feel that way, and to be able to be oppositional with people. So you've had a huge impact also, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, I want Max to grow up knowing that that everybody's voice is valuable.
Yeah.
And I don't want him to feel like he's the kid in class that says, oh, but I have a black friend. You know, my dad has a black friend, so we're cool.
Yeah.
And man, I remember calling you over the summer and asking questions to, you know, educate myself. And Max is in the back seat as I'm driving back home from Kansas City, where I talked to my parents and tried to have some rough conversations and just kind of sorting through kind of this, what's going on in cities around America. And, you know, I remember the words that you spoke to me and they hit deep. And so that allows me to inform Max and be able to have better speak more truth, right? And from a place where I wouldn't have experienced that on my own. So you say that you're implementing things in your family and household. I hope you only pick the good things, because there was plenty of bad to see, stupid mistakes and stupid stuff I've done. So I hope you only got to see the good stuff, or, you know, only implementing the good stuff and scratched out the, I'm not doing that.
Nah, I'm trying to implement everything and just kind of Michelle. Like, ooh, well, I learned that from Aaron, babe. Don't. Well, thank you both so much for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. And again, I look forward to, I'm really thankful for our friendship. and for the continued opportunities to be able to tap into your wealth of knowledge and experience as I bring different voices and perspectives to the people who listen to this podcast for, you know, for their benefit as well. So thank you so much. Thank you.